All right, hey everybody. Looks like we're right here at the top of the hour, so let's get started. Hi, my name is Ryan. I'm a PM over in the VS Client Tools team, and our team's responsible for the JavaScript Chakra engine, the IE developer tools, the VS performance and diagnostic tools, the XAML design tools in both Blend and VS, and then also the HTML design tools in Blend. So we really care about everything that has anything to do with user interface development. And so I'm here today to kind of cover the little part of the world that is HTML design tools in Blend. So I know everyone's seen like a lot of slide decks over the last couple of days, and I'm sure that this is a developers conference, everyone's comfortable in code. So after this, I've got maybe three slides with any kind of meaningful content. Other than that, we're going to be spending the entire time in the product. So hope you enjoy taking a tour and kind of digging on into some CSS and HTML and JavaScript. We're going to start just by reviewing the basics with a Hello World app. Then we'll spend the vast majority of our time exploring new features through this app we created called Demographics, which goes out to the U.S. Census Bureau, pulls down demographic information for different zip codes, and summarizes it into some infographics that just are pure CSS infographics. So we'll do a little bit of some acrobatics there in terms of CSS for a while. Then we'll wrap it up with a victory lap, reviewing some of the features that we've looked at, and give you guys a chance to ask questions, hopefully, during Q&A at the end. All right, having said that, goodbye slide deck, hello product. Excellent. All right, so we're just going to start by opening up Blend. And I'm going to create a new project using one of the new templates to Visual Studio 2013. I'm going to use the hub template. And the hub template really came about after we noticed a design pattern emerging that mixed full bleed images with sort of teasers for content categories and specific articles. So the hub template, if you run it, looks a little something like this. And you may recognize this from a large number of apps that get installed by default in Windows 8.1. So for example, like the Bing Finance app, right? So big bleed image here, lots of different sections. And we click into some sections and we get specific content. All right, cool stuff. Back over here into Blend. So one of the first things that I want you to notice here is that the app is actually running in the design surface. This is a running application. Our design surface is WWA host or Trident, just with a thin veneer of adorners on top of it that allow me to select, edit, and manipulate objects directly. So it's kind of like the simulator plus editor, all in one, wrapped into one. Over on the left-hand side, the live DOM contains a runtime representation of the application. So this is kind of similar to the DOM that you'd find in VS's DOM Explorer or the F12 development tools, in so much as it's not just what's there in markup, but it's what's there at runtime. Now, since this is the application at runtime and most Windows Store applications adopt the single-page application model, wherein a host document consumes markup from multiple pages, that means that the view we're looking at right now contains probably like two or three different HTML files, four or five different CSS files, maybe a half dozen JavaScript files. And we can actually see that if we open up the code editor down here and related files, which is kind of what we call the secondary code editor here to the side. You got a little drop-down that shows you all of the documents within the document closure. So in fact, we're drawing content from default.html and hub.html. We got those three different CSS files and, I don't know, once again, maybe six or seven different JavaScript files. From within Blend, from within this one view, I have access to edit all of these files. So for example, the element that I've just selected here, well, it tells us the selected content is part of hub.html, and in fact, in my editor down here, it has opened hub.html, even though my active tab is default.html. And if I were to go over here and let's say add a class, foobar, you'll see that it actually dove in and edited the attribute value for that image in hub.html. What Blend is doing is it maintains a map linking the runtime representation of each object, once again, the runtime application being that live design surface that's up there, back to the originating markup. So from within one view, I can edit any file within the document closure. We already saw one of the locations where most of the edits are going to happen. That's the HTML attributes tab, where predictably HTML attributes get edited. But the other one is the CSS properties pane. This is a really important pane, really where you're going to probably spend 70% of your time if you're working within Blend. The CSS properties pane up here in the top provides a list of all the different style rules that influence or affect the currently selected element. In this case, I see that the vast majority of them come from UI dark, which is predictable since we haven't customized the application in any way yet. And then we've also got the opportunity to edit inline style. This is effectively the CSS cascade, except that we've got two additional style rules that are available to us, or more accurately, they're virtual style rules. Computed values, we all know and recognize if we've worked with CSS before, and winning properties. Winning properties can be thought of this way. It is the same thing as computed values before the browser or before the rendering engine has normalized everything into pixels or RGBA values. So, for example, let's see if I can find some text that has color on it. I'm going to search for color here. Actually, color is a bad one to search for. Let's search for something that has M's on it. And what I'll do, I'll actually just force this guy to be a font size. Maybe do it here. Yeah. I will force this guy to be a font size of 3 M's. Well, which made it huge, but it'll work for the purposes of demonstrating winning properties. Winning properties, you'll see here, 3M, and if I go to computed values, it's already been normalized to 160. Wow, that's giant, 168 pixels. But winning properties essentially guarantees that any edits that I make to this element will occur. So it reaches into all the class-based style rules and the ID-based style rules and the inline style and provides a composite view of the element that is editable, unlike computed values. Okay, so everything that you've seen here is available in Visual Studio 2012, Blend for 2012. That was just kind of old territory. There are countless small improvements and bug fixes that we made in Visual Studio 2013 Blend Preview. But there's really 10 headline features that we'll visit today. I won't spend too much time dwelling and iterating through them right now, but keep a lookout for these over the coming 45 minutes. So let's get to our actual demo application. Now, just so everyone feels comfortable with the code base that we're walking into first, I'm going to start in Visual Studio. So we have a good idea of how this application is structured. Now, in the course of application development, probably 80% of your time is actually going to be spent in Visual Studio. JavaScript is complicated. Debugging takes work and takes specialized tools. Visual Studio is the right place for all JavaScript authoring and debugging to happen. So we're going to stay in Visual Studio while we take a tour of that. Blend, on the other hand, is where we go for all of our styling and our UI construction. Let's start by making sure that we understand kind of what the application is that we're started with. So default.html, okay, nothing fancy here. But as you all know, default.js is one of the first things that gets loaded along with data.js. We'll start in data.js. Quick overview of what the application is. We go to the US Census Bureau, bring down some data, display the zip codes and a list, and then we can click on each one of the zip codes and go to a detail page that provides kind of a breakdown of all of that census data. So, oops. Line by line, var I. Okay, it's going to be a counter. We need API keys, so I save my API keys globally up here. We're going to be saving data to our application, saving data locally to a text file, so we create shortcuts to that. And then when you load the application for the first time, you need a couple of default zip codes to display, so we just happen to choose these. These are all places that I've lived at one place or another. Beyond that, we create this data object in the global namespace. Its entire purpose for existence is to give us access to the list view data source and to the methods that are defined below. Down here, save settings and load settings. I bet you can guess what they do. They are really just saving all of the current settings and zip codes to a local text file or loading them back up. Get Bing data is used to go out to Bing using a zip code. It gives us latitude and longitude, city and state information so that we can use that when we go out to the US Census Bureau. Get population, get commute data, and get housing data. Those are our three methods to go out to the US Census Bureau where we get, well, commute, housing, and population information. And it turns out that the US Census Bureau returns massively complex data, so we need to normalize it into a format that we can use, a nice JSON object that we can pass over to our list view. And for that purpose, I've got these three private methods, format population data, format commute data, and format housing data, which all sort of bully it into the format that I need, along with a couple of helper functions to sum up my population counts and a lookup for my state code. All right, so now you know what the model looks like. Default.js is really the exact same code that you would get in a grid template, save for this load settings, which goes out and calls, well, load settings, and that triggers all of that, all of those calls out to the US Census Bureau. And then finally, the first page that we load is grouped items. GroupedItems.html contains the basic HTML that I need just to display a list view. And groupedItems.js contains all of my event handler hookups. In this case, there aren't very many. We're really just passing the US Census Bureau data back and forth. And then we've got a couple of special methods here for showing and hiding a flyout, along with the ability to add a zip code from that. All right, so now you guys have a good idea of what the basic structure of our controller is and what our model looks like. Let's go into Blend and do some styling. Fortunately, access to Blend is very convenient from within Visual Studio. I can just right-click anywhere and say Open in Blend. This will take us directly to Blend and open up a new instance of Blend for us. All right, here's our demographics application. Let's actually run it, just see what it does today before we've done any styling. All right, we've got a few zip codes in there. Turns out that I've already run this application before and added a couple more zip codes to it. Not much going on visually. If I click on it, I've got, well, an entirely unstyled version of the application, but nevertheless, I can see that it is bringing data down, which is fantastic. All right, it's really just those two pages. So let's get to work doing some interesting styling. All right, so first thing that I'm going to want to do is kind of work to style this list view itself. So I'm going to start by searching for locale. And this is one of the first new features that I want to point out. New to Blend 2013, I can now use CSS syntax to locate any element within my DOM. The selected elements get this kind of blue highlighting, makes it really easy to find. All right, and I'm going to be using this throughout the demo to narrow down the number of elements so that I can really quickly and easily find the element that I'm trying to edit. All right, so we're going to make this guy, you know what, let's start by giving it some background so we can see it a little bit easier. I'm going to set the background color to, I don't know, some nice shade of bluish here. All right, now I can actually see what the bounds of that element are. And I will drag it so it's a little bit larger. Okay, easy enough. But you know what? Three giant blue squares don't really do a whole lot for me. It seems like we probably want to have, something about that location. Well, here we can use another one of our new features. We can edit our data binding, and we get a nice little dialogue here, a little modal dialogue that gives us a window into all the different variables that are available to us with the current list view. In this case, it so happens that I had brought back some satellite information from Bing, and so there we go. I can just instantly populate that with some satellite information. Now, this is actually taking the center point of that zip code, plopping it in there, and you can see that my hometown of Gulf Breeze, Florida has got a lot of water. Awesome. All right. Next thing, I'm going to make this zip code a little bit bigger and put it on its own page, or its own line here. And I'm going to use one of the other new features available in 2013. Not only can I search for properties via the search box here, but I can now also set properties. So I'm just going to say font size colon 3M. Oops, it lets me know if I didn't set it. Oh, and I'm not able to set it because it's not in a writable location. So I'll just write that to the inline instead. There we go. Now it's nice and big and visible. And you know what? I really don't want that to go to inline style. So I'm going to use another feature. Refactoring is really easy. All I've got to do is right click, cut my properties. I can go over into the live DOM, right click, create a style rule from element class. In this case, locale has already been set. It creates a style rule for me at the same time. Now I can paste those properties that I cut from inline style back into locale, and it's nice and big. Well, that had the unfortunate consequence of turning Gulf Breeze, Florida into giant text as well. So let's actually reduce the font size on that guy. We can right-click from there as well, choose city, reduce the font size there to something a little bit smaller, and the same thing for our state. Great. And this guy, let's give this guy a display of. Fantastic. All right, these guys are butted up against the side a little bit too much for my taste, so I'm going to put a little bit of padding in there, but then we'll call it good. Fantastic. All right, so now this is a little bit more to my liking. It's got something to do with the population. All right, great. So from here, we're just going to head on into interactive mode. And in interactive mode, it allows us to really take all those click events, all those mouse events, and treat them as if I'm actually, well, interacting with the application. So that I can get to an interior page, exit out of interactive mode, that state is preserved on my design surface, and I can just keep on styling from here. This time, instead of having access to groupedItems.html, now I'm editing items.html or itemdetail.html and all of the CSS that is within that document closure. One of the other interesting things to note here is that if I go into my style rules pane that has a list of all the style sheets that are currently influencing my DOM, I notice that I've acquired over time additional CSS files. That's one of the peculiarities of kind of the single page application model, that as you navigate over time, the CSS files keep on adding up. So you need to make sure that the style rules you create are sufficiently unique or sufficiently specific so that as a user navigates around, they don't actually get style rules that accidentally trump each other. Nevertheless, I'm going to keep on here. And for the time being, that satellite image is just kind of distracting, so I'm going to get it out of the way. I'm going to use live DOM search to search through here. There it is. And I'm going to just toggle its visibility off. While I'm here in the live DOM and clicking there, one of the things that I want to take note of is some of the icons that are here next to the eyeballs. So these icons have, well, predictably special meaning. This one that looks kind of like a box dissolving, what that's really telling us is that that element comes from another document. In this case, it originates from itemdetail.css. And the lightning bolt up here means that this element is created at runtime. Almost 99.9% of the time, element being created at runtime means that JavaScript created it. However, there are times when WWA host, Trident, creates those elements for you. Good examples are when you have a table and then immediately underneath it there's a TR, a table row, Trident creates a T body in its place. Same thing happens if you omit a head tag from your document. Trident automatically creates that head tag for you. Anyhow, let's keep on going through this. And now that we've got a better view of kind of what's going on here, let's actually try to do some styling around this. So I'm going to use some advanced selector syntax here to kind of filter out to everything that's a child of my section tag here. If I create the section, we'll see that we've already created a little bit of a grid here, and I can start moving some of these elements around. Let's see here. In fact, I'm going to right-click here, create a style rule from element ID from my commute title. I'm just going to drag and drop it over into the next row. As I do that, you'll see that we got some red Dorners that showed up. That's another one of the features that got added in Blend 2013, snapping. We added rulers and guides and snapping to help you better position objects on the page, and that really helps you keep things aligned. It is worth noting, however, that snapping still respects the document flow, so if you don't have a position of fixed or absolute or relative, then snapping's not going to do much for you. It's still going to respect kind of IE's page layout. We'll do the same thing with housing title. Create a style rule and just drag it on over. And let's do the same thing with our actual infographs here. Grab that guy down. Drag this guy down. And drag this guy down. Fantastic. Okay, so now we've got a little bit sort of more legible view of our document. Let's start by working with our population graph. Oops. Star. All right, and you see that I use this live DOM search all the time. It makes it so much easier to find the elements and to limit what I'm actually working with, so I'm not overwhelmed by all the elements that get dynamically created by WinJS. So we'll go here. We're going to add a style rule by class. And I'm going to go ahead and use a hotkey here. Oh, actually, we'll just do display. In this grid, we're going to set, let's see here, columns. 50 pixels says that the first column should be 50 pixels, and then the remainder of it I'm going to split evenly into two equal fractions. And you'll see that my design surface instantly updated to show it there. And I've got these handy little things here where I can hover over it, and if I wanted to change this instead of one fraction to, I don't know, 30 pixels, right? easily done. I can do it right there on the design surface. Now, truth be told, I want to keep it at one fraction, so I'm just going to control Z that. No biggie. Awesome. And we only need one row here. We'll make this guy 33 pixels just to give it a little bit of height. Excellent. So what I've really got here underneath this is the age range gives me the age range for that population group. Then I've got a percent-based representation for male and female. So I'm going to create another style rule here by element class. And let's give this some background so we can actually see what's going on here. Since these are males, we'll give them a very male-like blue. We're here into gender norms. And female will have a lady-like pink. All right, well, those are kind of all on top of each other. That doesn't do us much good. So to get this into more of a histogram shape, I'm going to move the female distribution into the third column and the males into the second column. All right, but we want it to look more like kind of like an hourglass, like a tree there. So to do that, we're going to use column align for our males, and we'll put it to the end. All right, great. So let's get kind of zoom out a little bit. The thing is, we've got all of this white space. Well, that's because of a total population, you're only going to have 10% that are any one kind of population or age range. So what we really need to do is we need to amplify our results a little bit. To do that, we're going to use CSS's transform. So, and we're going to perform that transform by performing just a scale on it. And we only need to scale the x-axis, not the y-axis. So we'll do it by a factor of, let's say, 2. Maybe even a little more than that, maybe 3. Nah, 2's good. We'll stay with 2. But notice that when I did that, the center point for the scale pushed the male bars over into the female side. So we just need to change our transform origin to 100%. And now all of our scale happens from the end to the left. Well, we don't want to skew our results, so let's do the exact same thing for the female side. We'll add a scale at 2, and this time a transform origin of 0%, which pushes it all to the right. Great. So now we've got a nice little tree showing the age distribution for Seattle, Washington. Let's see here. If you are, looks like single female between the ages of 20 and 29, you got a good chance of getting a date. Oh, no, wait, male, single, yeah, wow, that's a good place to live. Awesome, all right. So our population data is fairly well created. Let's move on to our commute data. All right, let's show everything under that. Excellent. So one of the first things we're going to want to do here is probably turn this guy into my most favorite layout convention, a grid. I love grids. And for this one, let's use our artboard adorners to create a couple of different columns here. All right, that looks pretty good. But I want to make sure that this one is exactly 100 pixels. All right. Once again, we're going to get that out of inline style and into an ID-based rule, because I am a good CSS developer and do not put things in inline style. Great. Awesome. Okay. So from here, oh, you know what? I put that on the wrong one. Here, we're going to cut this guy. We actually want that to be in our commute by. There we go. Now I'll paste it into here. Excellent. Now that affects all three of my rows there. I'm going to zoom in. And from here, I can now commute star. Let's actually give these guys some height too. We're going to set some grid rows And we'll make this an even 100 pixels as well. Now it would be helpful if we could actually see this element. So what I want to do is I want to give this circle some background color. Background color. We'll do a nice slime green there. Awesome. And you'll see that my height and width, and I'll actually change this show only set properties here. My background image, my height and width all have a yellow border around them. That yellow border indicates that these values have been data bound. Just like we edited the data binding for our satellite image on the first page, so too are these data bound, in this case, to the percent value of that particular population. And that's causing them to be 24% of the total available space. And we can take that then and use, let's actually create our circle here, use our new border radius gestures to transform those into circles, right? So now we've got some nice, relatively sized circles that indicate the overall distribution of that particular population. Now, it so happens that because these circles can get smaller and larger, a pixel value for border radius is maybe a little bit less helpful. So let's actually just turn that into a percentage. We'll make it 100%. Excellent. So now, no matter how large that div gets, it will always stay round. Now, we're really having the same problem that we had with our population histogram here, which is that all these guys are really far too small. So let's use transform again. To scale these guys out. We'll give these guys a factor of 2. Okay, 2 seems good. And now they're a little bit bigger. But if it's 0%, I don't want the circle to disappear entirely. So let's set a min width and height on that so that the circle never completely disappears. In this case, we'll say minimum of 30 pixels. Great. Now, I happened to notice earlier when I was doing the data binding here that, look at that, there's already an image that's been data bound to this, but I can't see an image there. I know why that is. That is because background size has not been set to cover. And now our little icons can pop in there and that will shrink or expand to the size of the element itself. So we can see here that for this particular zip code, which zip code were we in? 98101, there is a huge percentage of the population that is biking or walking to work rather than using transit or their car. It's a pretty healthy zip code. Awesome. Now, there were some values that were hidden behind here, too, though. Yep, there it is. He's kind of hidden behind my circle right now. Let's just get him over into the second column. Use our grid alignment, grid column alignment, to align it to the center. Actually, that was row alignment. We'll do row align center as well. I actually want that to be start. And up our font size. 3. Excellent. Now I've noticed that my circles are off of alignment with my numbers, with my percentages, so I'm just going to change their alignment as well. So grid row align center centers the data on the available space, as does column align. Brilliant. Awesome. And it looks like, oh yeah, these guys are now getting a little bit too close. If this ever gets over 52%, it's going to be too big. So instead of making that grid column 2, let's make it grid column 3 and bring this guy over a little bit closer. There we go. That's a little bit better distribution. All right, so I'm feeling pretty good about the commute data now. We've got three relatively sized circles representing the population distribution. We've got our percentages there, and we were able to use our kind of grid adorners to pretty precisely lay that out, along with our border radius adorners to turn those into circles. Let's finish this out with our rent information here. So this is housing data, basically saying whether or not people rent or own. Kind of gives you an idea of maybe what stage of life people are at. If they're in kind of a transitional state, maybe they're renting. If they're a little bit more settled, maybe they own. So for this, we're going to go with housing, show everything under housing. I bet you can't guess what type of display I'm going to give this one. I swear there are other different types of layout, but grid is so effective, so efficient. And I am going to also, let's see here, make this width of 50%. There we go. We'll give this, make there two columns of equal distribution. And let's just carry that guy out so he's a little bit taller. Awesome. So now we'll create a style rule targeting our rental information, our rental data. And we'll put that guy into the second column. Now, it would help if I actually could see these guys here. So I'm going to give them a background color again. Like a deep navy. And for the owner, we'll go with something orangey. Excellent. All right. And let's see here. Let us also take these guys and align them to the bottom. Grid column. Grid row align. There we go. End. And grid rent align. And it looks like those are a little bit shorter than I expected. Let's wonder what's going on there. Housing graph. Let's take a look at our set properties so we can debug that. Oh, I wonder if it is because grid rows 300 pics. There we go. Now we actually have some grid rows to give those some height. Fantastic. That means that I can actually clear out my height declaration here. Excellent. So now I can see that the number of people owning versus renting, it's just about all rentals. But I want, in case this this div gets too small, I want the owning rental data to kind of still be seen. I want to get it outside of that actual visible bar chart. So what I'm going to do here is I'm going to select all of these guys, and I can assign a class and create a style rule to all of the selected elements at once with a single gesture. It's that same add class gesture that I've been using. This time I can specify which one I want it to be. I'll call this, what will I call this? I'll call it slide up, because that's exactly what I'm going to make these guys do. I'm going to make them slide up. And because I have four elements selected now, my list of applied style rules only shows those style rules which apply to all four selected elements. So now I can just use transform in the category view to take that translation. And let's move it up by, I don't know, like 60 pixels. Oh, we want it not down, but up. Negative. Great. So that moved them out. But I really kind of want to format that a little bit differently. I want those to be centered with the bars. So I'll use text align to center that. I'll give my own, let's see here, housing label. We will give that guy a display of block to to force it to be on its own line. And then finally, our values here will create a new style rule and make this guy much larger so that you can quickly, at a glance, see those numbers. All right. So now, it looks like we've got a reasonable collection of housing of population information here. The page is still a little bit drab, though. Well, let's be honest, I want a chance to show off one of our most awesome new features. So we're going to give this guy a background. Remember how we had some satellite information or a satellite image in the background? Let's bring him back. So we're going to toggle visibility back on. There it is. And we're going to just go ahead and we're going to create a style rule for it. So I want to use the satellite information as the background for my entire page, which is easy enough. This is nothing new. We've all done it before. So we'll give this guy a position, a fixed width of 100%. Height of 100%. There it is, showing up in all of its gloriousness. And it looks like it's kind of showing up over some other things, so I happen to need to give this guy a z-index, which is unfortunate. I hate using z-indexes, but sometimes you got to do it. All right. And then finally, I want to reduce the opacity of this guy so that we can actually see her showing up there. Now, I notice that I've got a hard edge here. I can eliminate that by using background sizing cover so that, once again, the background itself never tiles over the course of the visible space. Well, now, I haven't done anything really revolutionary yet. What I really want to do, for those of you that are documentary fans, maybe you've seen Ken Burns' Civil War. Well, he kind of piloted an effect that has come to be known as the Ken Burns effect. So I'm going to create a Ken Burns effect on my satellite imagery back here. What that means is I need to animate this satellite image. So I'm going to back out here and open up our animation pane here, where we have a brand new value editor that allows us to create layers. I'm going to call this guy Ken Burns. We'll give it a duration of 5 seconds just to make it kind of slow. No delay. We only want it to happen once. Timing function, we want it to kind of ease in and then ease out. So let's do that. We'll choose ease in, ease out. Fill mode. Fill mode basically says, when you've gotten to the end of your animation, do you go back to the element's natural state, or do you preserve that 100% setting? Well, we want to preserve the 100% so that it doesn't jump back to the natural state. So we'll choose forwards. We want it to play forward, but we could also have it ping pong in an alternate fashion, reverse or alternate reverse. And play state, we want it to start running. Okay, now let's animate it. So we took a cue from the XAML design tools and brought in a timeline-based value editor into Blend for HTML. The timeline-based value editor is everything that you would expect out of a totally awesome animation timeline. Let's see here. In this case, we've got a red border around the design surface that says, hey, you're in animation mode. Everything that you do now affects the animation. I'm going to start by fading in, which means that I need to start with a 0% opacity. I'll move in 1 second, and you'll see already that as I drag, I can see this slowly fading in. I don't want the fade in to be so short, though. I want it to fade in at about 1 second. I also want this guy to kind of grow and kind of move to the side at the same time, so I'm going to use transform again. We'll do a scale, and we want to be subtle. So 1.2 by a factor of 1.2 should do it. And I also want this to translate, in other words, to shift gently to the side. So we'll shift by about, let's say, 5%. Ooh, that was too much. Let's say by 50 pixels. And 50 pixels. I could probably do a little bit more on the x-axis. Let's make it 70 pixels. Yeah, there we go. Now, that happens a little too fast. The fade can happen slowly, but I want the transform to happen really slowly. So I can just grab that keyframe, move it over to here, and now fade in quick, move slower. Let's actually hit play on that guy. Go back to the beginning. That's pretty good, not so bad. Yeah, that's worthy of applause, thank you. It could be a little bit slower though, so I'm actually gonna take this guy down to 50%, and let's actually just drag the whole thing out to 10 seconds, and we'll drag our opacity back down to 1 second. Awesome, let's see what this guy looks like in interactive mode. That is pretty sweet. Awesome. Okay. So now we're going to come back out of it. Only thing that I really do want to do here, only because it's bugging me, I'm going to reduce the size of the Seattle, Washington. Font size, 0.5M. Yeah, that's a little bit better. Okay. So we're going to navigate back to our homepage here. One of the last great things to show is Windows design guidelines call for, you know, flat design and for using, you know, touch-centric gestures and all that kind of stuff. And by default, there's a certain look that comes with Windows Store applications. It's got that Sego UI Lite kind of thing. But there are a lot of times where having a Sego UI Lite just makes everything feel a little bit too uniform. It's worth being able to customize the typography of your application. Enter custom fonts. So if I want to make this kind of a more branded experience, I can easily do that by, I'm going to go over to my project pane here, and I want to use a TrueType font of my own kind of my own designs. In this case, I'm just going to import one, an existing item. I'm going to add from my desktop, I've got a Museo Sans font right here. As soon as I import that font, I get a little dialogue that asks me, hey, we noticed you were importing a font. Would you like to create an at font face rule? Heck yeah, I would. So we'll go ahead and do that. Gives us an opportunity to kind of guide us through creating it. And when you create that at font face rule, you can specify for this particular TrueType or OpenType file, is this the bold version of this font? Is this the italics version of this font? Because as you know, any font family is actually made up of multiple fonts underneath it. Well, we're just going to use this one for all flavors of the font. So I won't customize my font style, stretch, or weight at all. Now, I've automatically created that at font face rule right down here. I can go to, well, let's do this from content host. ID. Oh, it looks like I already had one. Don't even need to do that. Already had one. Now, in my font family value editor, I can open up here, and from here, I can choose this new font that I added, and you'll see that we have a brand new preview of the actual fonts that were that exists or are available to you in your project in their actual font style. In this case, we'll choose Museo Font, Museo Sans, and you'll see gone is the Sego UI Lite, hello, Museo Sans. From here, I think other than maybe, oh, just because it's a good thing to do, let's actually create a little background to give this a little bit more character. Background color, we'll make it a gradient. Somewhere in this range. Somewhere in this range. Yeah. All right. So now we're looking like a real application. One of the last things that we need to do, and actually, let's actually save and run it real quick. See how things are looking. Oops. Nope. Control F5. It's thinking about it. Oh, it's because I was hitting function. Control F5. Excellent. So now, for each one of our things here, oh, sad. Looks like we might have a little bug in our animation there. That's okay. But you'll see that we've got all of our different data for them. And if I right-click, you'll see that we have an opportunity to add zip code. So let's actually do that. We'll add a zip code. Someone from the audience, give me a zip code. U.S. City. 97229. There we go. It's going to take a second. There it is, Portland, Oregon. Wow. You have some really great grass there, it looks like. All right. So there's Portland, Oregon. Add it in there. Whoa, everybody drives. All right. One of the last things we want to do here, though, is we notice that we've got this app bar. Now, the default sort of black app bar is nice and all, but once again, really creating a great Windows Store app is all about customization. So I want to walk you through what it is to actually style app bars and flyouts in Blend. There we are. So I'm done animating here. I can close my animation pane. So I want to search for my app bar. Oops. App bar here. And here it is, right there. But how do I get the guy to show up? Well, I've got a couple of different options. One is that I can go into interactive mode and activate it. Or two, I can right-click on that guy and activate it from directly within Blend. Well, there we go. Now it shows up, and I'm free to style away. So we'll just right-click. Let's see here. Create style rule from element class. Actually, no, let's give this guy an ID. App bar. Good to go. Give it a background color. I'm really into bright colors these days, so give it something purpley. And there we go. The same principle applies to our flyout. I can either go into interactive mode, activate the flyout, and come out, or just directly from my flyout here, I can right-click and say activate flyout and style away. We'll actually just make this guy the same color as our app bar. And maybe even take that button and make it straight up white. Awesome. Okay, so now we've got those styled. We can make them go away by returning back to our live DOM, clicking on it, or I can also do it by clicking directly on the element itself and choosing deactivate. There we go. So the very last thing that I want to show you here is Blend's preview capability for apps at different sizes and orientations. For this, I'm going to display my devices pane. And we have a number of new display sizes that are available in here. But the important takeaway is that for our application, we can now, you can see it at portrait view. We can see it in an edge state that's on the side here, or any one of these new states. And we can also, if we want, grab this guy and drag him. Oh, am I getting the wrong one? Oh, I have to do it from here. To a variable size, right? So all of the new developments that are present in Windows Store applications for Windows 8.1, you can continue to design and take advantage of all the new platform capabilities within Blend's design surface as well. And just remember here that To do that, you'll want to create at media rules that target those individual kind of min and max sizes. Awesome. Okay, so we only have a couple of minutes left. Just want to do a quick little review then. So, last 45, 50 minutes, some of my favorite features and stuff that is really kind of the take home for you. Unlike in Visual Studio, you don't have to make changes and, you know, change your CSS and then go back and run it again and then come back and change some CSS again and run it again. There's a better place to do styling, and that's within Blend. It is Visual Studio's styling arm. If Visual Studio is a Swiss Army knife with, you know, this thick and with 20 different specialized tools on it, this is the specialized tool you pull out when you're ready to do layout and CSS. All changes are written to source, and they're written directly, you know, there are 20 documents within the document closure that contribute to that. Blend is smart enough to map it back to the source code, all from that one view. You also have complete confidence that what you see is what the application's going to really be like, because that application is running in our design surface. It's its own mini simulator. Squeaky clean code. So we didn't actually look too much at the code. I'll take a quick look back at it, just because I really do want you guys to see. We care very, very deeply about code cleanliness, about tabbing, about expressing code in the simplest way possible. Look at this. Animation. Rather than expand that out into, was it 6 or 7 different properties, that actually got collapsed down into the shorthand. That is the case with all shorthand properties within CSS. If it can be expressed in shorthand and not accidentally trump another style rule, we'll do it. And there is, to the best of my knowledge, not another ID out there that's smart enough to be able to know when to expand and collapse between shorthand. And then finally, you're able to preview at multiple device sizes, resolutions, and orientations. You can use that device pane to flip into portrait view, to go into any kind of one of the smaller sizes that are available by dragging the gutter. You can even preview at different resolutions, whether it's, you know, 1024 by 768 or some massive resolution. And finally, a quick victory lap around some of the features that we saw. CSS animation, the timeline there, very, very cool. The productivity gains found by search and set properties and being able to find elements in that live DOM using CSS syntax, that gets away so much of the clutter and makes it much easier to find where you're at within the document. We didn't have time today, but there's also the introduction of JavaScript behaviors, essentially the ability to add event handlers without having to write code. We embedded custom fonts, and we used data binding to create those infographics. We now also have rulers and guides, snapping, and we can do border radiuses directly on the design surface. And I don't know if you guys noticed, but in Dev 12, or in the Visual Studio 2012, when you would zoom in and blend the design surface, you'd get kind of a little bit bitmappy. It would kind of be a little bit fuzzy around the edges. While we were working inside of Blend Preview, 2013 Preview, all the edges, even at super high zoom levels, are really, really crisp. We've improved the design surface to use hardware accelerated rendering to enable 60 frame per second animation and to really kind of improve the fidelity at higher zoom levels. So with that, there are a few sessions that are closely related to today's session. What's new for Visual Studio for XAML is a great session. Uni gave it yesterday, so it's not too late. You can still catch it on Channel 9 video. Creating your first app using HTML and JavaScript also happened today, but there's some great blend usage in there. Diagnosing issues in JavaScript Windows Store apps coming up, and then as well as designing and building user interfaces for Windows, which also happened during this hour, but once again is available on Channel 9. If anyone wants to get in contact with me, email me, Twitter me, find me online. I am super passionate about front-end development, particularly HTML, CSS, JavaScript development. I'm really excited to see that the broader industry is starting to give client-side front-end development a lot more respect. And it's becoming the de facto language or platform to use for cross-device development, and that really excites me. I would love to talk to you more about it. I am literally in the last 3 seconds that are allotted to me, but if you guys want to stick around and ask some questions, I'm more than happy and excited to talk to you about what Blend has to offer or just geek out about CSS. Thank you so very, very much. I hope you guys have a great conference.